You are listening to...
I got my two Stanley Cup rings plug in my ear.
The Man Cave Podcast.
I'm a man! I love me some
meat! With Jeremy Lambert.
Can't wait!
Yes, we're in the Man Cave. Joining me today, ready to shoot himself live in Arizona. We're going to air it like CNN did. Sean Comer, what's up, buddy?
Oh, crikey fuck, folks. I'm Sean Comer from 411 Mania's Music Zone, and after about a year of doing this, I've come to accept that.
Also on the line, Sam Ricchetti, maybe not ready to shoot himself, ready to shoot me. What's up, buddy?
I was born ready to shoot you, but after all these, fail intros, right now I'm sending somebody right over there. And you know I got connections given my background and all. I'm doing great. What's up, guys?
Nothing. Oh. Threatening me live on my own show. Thanks. All right. We're going to talk some video games, everybody. Dishonored, Assassin's Creed, GTA, that's when I'll talk, but this is mostly going to be Sean and Sammer. So if you hate me, you're going to love this podcast. If you love Sammer's sexy French accent voice, you're going to love this podcast. And if you love Sean, I don't know what you bring to the table, Sean, but you're going to love this podcast if you love him.
My rich, soothing baritone, acerbic wit, and occasionally creative cursing.
That's so true. You do have a nice baritone voice. I'm kind of in love
with you. Very much. All right. Thank you very much.
So, Real quickly, hold on. Let me set this up. I'm not laying out just yet. Dishonored. That's the big hit game that's out right now. I want to play it. It looks pretty fun. Samri, you're talking about that it's kind of like stealth games. I don't like that. I like the run and gun. Just get shit over with. But sell me on Dishonored. It's about revenge. And is Emily Van Camp in it?
Well, no to the other question. And so far, it is about revenge. Now, again, I haven't played that deeply into the story yet, but yeah, it does sound like it's not strictly a revenge title. There is like a political aspect to it. Essentially, without giving too much away, you're a guy who got framed for murder of the city's empress, and you got locked up. So a bunch of guys helped you escape, and now you're looking to overturn the tyrant sitting at the top of the helm of the city. So that's the story in a nutshell so far.
So are you trying to occupy the throne?
No. At least, not so far. I don't know how the story develops. Maybe that occurs later. And if it does, then it's the greatest game of all time, even though I absolutely hate and loathe our column title. But that's true, by the way. But we've talked about this previously. The game... Again, you just said you're not a fan of stealth, and that's fine. A lot of people actually, Stuart Lang was talking to me about the same thing, and it is strictly, almost strictly stealthy. However, I think even non-stealth fans should be able to appreciate the creativity, variety, and options that the game provides you with. If you have played games like Metal Gear Solid, Splinter Cell, or Assassin's Creed, which I think would be the most comparable game to this one, there isn't, at least in Assassin's Creed, there isn't a lot of room for creativity in terms of, how can you kill somebody? All right, so mainly you're stealthy. You can do like this air assassination. You come up from behind them and, stick your dagger or whatever, your hidden blade. And it's a cool game. We'll talk about that. I love Assassin's Creed. But I think one thing that Dishonored does really, really well is that it essentially lets you be the assassin in the truest form possible, as in you get to decide how to kill people. And that ranges from poison. You don't even have to kill them at all. Like, I'm sure this has been part of the, the most discussed aspects of the game, is that you don't really have to kill anybody to complete it.
I think that is by far the most intriguing thing. Now, I personally feel that you'd be missing out.
Sandra, come back to the microphone.
Oh, sorry. I was trying to reach out for something. Sorry. But you can finish the game by just putting people to sleep without actually killing anybody. There are times when you can avoid combat altogether if you want to.
See, I'll tell you what that makes it sound more like. That actually makes it sound more like Metal Gear Solid 2.
Yeah, but this is the difference. This is an option that you have. Now, I do feel that...
Well, it's an option in Metal Gear Solid 2 as well. I mean, you can play through almost that entire game without killing anybody. In fact, I believe you can even make it through most of the boss fights without...
I haven't played this game anyway. Since like 5 years ago. That's why I don't remember it. But so, yeah, go ahead.
Well, if I may just actually throw in here for just a second while I have the floor, this game is absolutely stacked with aspects that intrigue me, starting with the fact that it's not developed by Bethesda, but it is published by them. So I am a bit of a sucker for the fact that if you attach a certain developer or a certain publisher to a game, I do have my preconceived notions. If EA is attached to it, I realize that disappointment is at least going to be a 50-50 probability. Actually, honestly, I could say that about EA or BioWare at this point, but neither here nor there. If it's Rockstar, I can expect to see roughly the same formula that I've seen in every game they've ever put out, but I can expect it to be incredibly enjoyable despite looking like every other Rockstar game. And same thing goes for anything developed by Sonic Team. But putting that one kind of external factor aside, this has got a stacked voice cast too. It includes, as Jeremy pointed out, Emily Van Camp. It's got Susan Sarandon. It's got Brad Dourif.
Hold on. Emily Van Camp is actually doing voice for Dishonored?
I believe you mentioned that. I didn't.
No, I mentioned that because Samer was talking about the game is about revenge, and Emily Van Camp stars in the TV show Revenge.
I'm sorry, I spaced for a moment. I thought you actually had some inside info that I did. I was looking at
Jeremy my has zero outside info.
Yeah.
He has far outside. Like, that's... I'm ashamed I fell for that, because that's, like, not even over the plate. That's, like, pitched into the upper deck outside.
Wow, you thought I was being serious? Man, I threw you an intentional ball, and you still swung at it.
That right there, that is like a Chuck Knoblauch when he played for the Royals throw outside. Zombie, Jesus, I can't believe I got zinged by that one. But anyway,
I've done my job, folks.
Getting back to this superlative voice cast. It includes Susan Sarandon, Brad Dourif, who, if I had my sway over every casting decision from now until the end of all entertainment, would be cast in absolutely everything. It's got Carrie Fisher. It's got Billy Lush. It's got Lena Headey, Chloe Grace Moretz. It's stacked with really, really competent performers who are really going to, who I imagine, since I haven't played it yet, I'm still kind of pledging broke by broke and haven't had a chance to really pick it up, but people who just seem to bring out the best in every role that they play. My understanding of it is that, as Samer pointed out, it's possible to play through the whole thing and never, and rack up as few fatalities as possible. However, it sounds like one of the best two comparisons I can make to Assassin's Creed from what few impressions I've garnered are that, number one, you've got the stealth assassination motif going on. It seems like a bit of historical fiction in that the city of Dunwall is modeled on the setting of Victorian London. today. But also the fact that you really are given an open end as far as gameplay is concerned, in that you can rush straight in and really just take out everybody head on, just fight like a man, so to speak, if you're to think of it that way. Or you can go the more challenging route that will really test the mettle of your skills. And actually,
if I may touch you right there, Sean, it's also the more rewarding route, if I may that portion. But I feel that you'd be missing out on the purpose of the game if you play it head-on approach. I also add that if you're playing it on the most difficult, I don't know if it's called expert or whatever, but on the highest difficulty, it is difficult to take everybody head on, and it's not advisable, and I don't think it's as fun, but yeah, continue.
Well, yeah, and really, that's what made the difference between the first Assassin's Creed game and the ones that came after it, was the fact that in the first one, there really was, in my opinion, except for your own individual fun, which may vary, there really was nothing individually necessarily more rewarding about really playing up the stealth mechanic of it, rather than just diving right into every battle, just hack and slashing, countering. But in the subsequent games, starting in my opinion, particularly with Assassin's Creed Brotherhood, they really made it a lot more rewarding as far as your sync meter in those games to really go about each mission as directed, really focus on the external bonus challenges, which often were to remain undetected, go for the stealth kill, alert as few people as possible to your presence. And it was really, you were rewarded with gameplay bonuses as you went through it. And is there that kind of incentive in Dishonored, Sam?
Yeah, it is pretty similar in that regard, and the way they actually encourage you to play the stealthy approach, because one really important theme or prominent theme throughout the game is plague and rats. If you're just remotely informed about the game, I'm sure you've read about that. The city of Dunwall, as you said, is suffering from a plague problem, and it is actually an integral part of the story's not just theme but plot. And rats are all over the city. And they kind of tell you the more casualties you produce, the darker the city becomes and the darker the outcome becomes. Now, at the end of every mission, you get rewards for either going through the entire mission without killing anybody or going through the entire mission without getting detected once. So even if you do kill people, which, by the way, I would actually encourage to do it on occasion. I would encourage to do both approaches, kind of mix the two together, but all the while remaining stealthy, at least that's how I chose to play it. I thought it is the best mix, because you do have a lot of ways to go about the game. So you'd be kind of experiencing it in all of its aspects. But yes, they do reward you for producing the least bit of casualties and, more importantly, not getting detected. And so, yeah, there's that. In that regard, as you said, there are some pretty obvious similarities with Assassin's Creed. I have enjoyed, in general, I would say, it's not a rule of thumb, but in general, to me, I personally enjoy third-person games more than first-person games. To me, I think there's a certain, I feel more of a connection with the character when you can actually see them. But I think in this game, it works out perfectly. It adds to the mystery of who you really are. The only thing you see about your character is the mask that you put on. So you're essentially the one behind that mask. And I think one thing that this game accomplishes, without getting too philosophical, but is that it allows you to be the assassin. And the fact that, it provides you with that many options, it is pretty much the freedom it gives you, I think, as to the whole experience of being the assassin. It has a certain RPG to it as well. In fact, you know, there are certain missions and objectives which you can complete by taking different routes and making conscientious decisions. Like, they actually give you the options and you choose. So there is an RPG feel to it without being, you know, full-blown RPG. And also, I think, Sean, you'll notice once you play that the dialogue plays very similar to RPG games, if that makes any sense.
Like, do you mean there's a like a branching system in interactions? Is that what you're talking about?
There are interactions, to be sure. And, you know, some of them are kind of pointless. Not pointless, but you know what I mean? Like, you see a maid roaming around the house and you just approach her, press a button, and she'd say something. You know, that this is the sort of, you know, the RPG dialogue I was referring to. Your character doesn't say a single word throughout the game, The only time, you know, you're given options and how to respond, and you just pick the whatever sentence you want, but you don't hear his voice, which again, I think is cool because it adds to the mystery. I don't know if that changes the deeper you play into the game, but I wouldn't think it does. That wouldn't really make any sense that he'd suddenly start talking midway through it.
See, now you're really making it sound like a Bethesda game.
Yeah. And I think one thing also, there is, again, I think what this game accomplishes is that even though it's mainly a stealth action game, it kind of incorporates elements, as I said, of RPGs, and also it's almost open world without it being truly open world as well. So it kind of really succeeds in being a hybrid in every sense of the word. You can explore a lot. You can roam around rooftops, you can go down the sewers, you can even, one of the coolest things, as I said, plague and rats is a prominent part. One of the coolest things about the game is that you can actually possess a rat for like about 30 seconds or so. You actually become the rat, so it makes it easier to maneuver through, not easier, it makes it possible, because it would be otherwise impossible, to move around really tight spaces and go undetected. It is a really, really cool feature that, even though it sounds absurd, and I'll admit the first time I heard about it, I was kind of on the fence, but in the context of the game, I think it plays perfectly. I really like their usage of plague and rats throughout the game. It is such a unique feature.
I'll be honest with you. It doesn't sound absurd. Actually, it's a mechanic that's been used quite a bit across other games. It's just that some games have done it well and some games haven't.
It does it really well, this one.
Okay, well, that's good, because the one that I point to that didn't... is 2011's Amy, which was just, I think it was, no, actually, I think it was early 2012. Yes, I'm sorry, early 2012's Amy. Just the unapologetically horrible gameplay. The unengaging aspect of being able to occasionally send Amy, the titular little girl character, into small spaces, into locked rooms to go and manipulate buttons and switches and whatnot to advance. Just purely, absolutely aggravating. But that actually does sound mildly intriguing. And it also sounds more intriguing than necessarily relying on what could certainly be shoddy AI to go and do the same thing.
Yeah, and keep in mind, first of all, one cool thing about the game is that any feature you don't really like, you don't have to use it. And this is, to me, this is the best part about it. If you feel something makes it too easy, and the rat thing doesn't, in fact, you can't strictly rely on it at all, even if you try to, it doesn't, again, you can only possess the rat for so long, and it dies right after, you know, you leave its spirit or whatever. So it's not like you can repossess it to go somewhere else. I mean, there are always rats roaming around, but they don't make it too easy in the sense that you're essentially a swarm of rats throughout the entire game. That's not how it works out. But again, any feature you don't like there's this teleporting thing, which if you over-rely on it, I think it could kind of ruin the game. But the cool thing about it is that it's kind of overpowered if you really upgrade it towards, you know, its absolute maximum. It can make things too easy, but again, you don't have to rely on it. Absolutely not. But there are certain instances where you have to use it, but not strictly in a way. For example, if you want to reach like a rooftop or something, and it's like, you know, you're 9 feet away from it and you can, it makes it that. But it's not, it doesn't work in a way where you're on the street and you can jump off the top of the building with that teleport thing, or you know, through the other side of a wall or anything like that. So I would say balance is really the word I would describe to use the game. It's really interesting that they don't make it too easy. They don't make it too hard. In fact, one thing I really like, again, and it plays to the whole option thing, you can change the difficulty at any time during the game. So if you absolutely suck and you think, well, it's too hard, you can lower the difficulty. And if for some reason you're finding things too easy, which you really shouldn't, even if you're playing it on a normal difficulty, you shouldn't find it too easy. But if you're, you know, godlike at video games, then you can pretty much change the difficulty at any moment. I also like that the game allows you to save it at any moment, and really, which is something very few games do these days. I don't understand why. Like, I understand autosave is really important, and there is, you know, an autosave feature, obviously, in the game. But I hate games that don't let you save it the moment you want to, because, all right, I understand checkpoints. I understand usually it's not really they don't really ruin it, because, you know, there's usually not that big of an interval between checkpoints, but it's still highly annoying sometimes.
I'm really with you on that one. And that is something that really more attention should be paid to, because I would use the example of Mass Effect 2 and Mass Effect 3. You really have to be careful with your saves sometimes, or at least I found that I had to, because I remember my first time I played through that during one of the loyalty missions, I actually ended up ultimately failing it on my save because I didn't realize there was going to be an autosave after the point at which I made what turned out to be a critical fuck up. And I really wasn't in. I didn't have really a good save to where I could go back and replay it from the beginning of that one spot without having to go back and replay the entire mission. So it was just kind of, well, that's my main save. There we have it, and there goes that character's loyalty. So, bye, Thane. I feel bad that you're not going to survive the suicide mission now. But on the other hand, Mass Effect 3 has got a one-button anytime quick save feature, to where while it has the autosave, while it has the menu feature you can go to and save at any reasonable point, as long as you're not right in the middle of a firefight, you can also, well, on the PS3 anyway, you can hit select, and I'm sure that, you know, all you wonderful PC gamers out there, and this is nothing new to you, but it's something that I actually find myself on Mass Effect 2 getting caught kind of expecting to be able to do, but not necessarily just kind of futilely hitting select and then just kind of wondering, just kind of going, aw, forgot, didn't have this yet. So, yeah, I'm with you on that. Autosave definitely has its merits if you're one of those people who gets so in the thick of a game that they just end up forgetting to. But at the same time, yeah. I mean, there's no reason that any game made nowadays should not have a manual save feature.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like they're mutually exclusive. You just have both features together and problem solved. Right. I don't understand why it's not made more. Especially in games like this where sometimes you feel the need to save because you found, you know, like a health drink or whatever. You know what I mean? Like if you picked up a few coins, you've upgraded a weapon. It doesn't have to be something really essential towards your advancement in the game. Sometimes it could be something minor, but, you know, you die moments later and you forget. You turn off the console or whatever. So it's kind of, to me, I just don't understand why more games don't do it. So I was surprised, pleasantly surprised. I guess it's not a big surprise. I mean, it's just a safe feature.
Well, I mean, and I would chalk having a good mind of that, being conscientious of that, up to the fact that Bethesda is, at its core, it's an action RPG studio and publisher. I mean, that's their bread and butter. So you'd kind of expect that would be something they would take into consideration, since RPGs are obviously some of the most save-happy games that you're going to find. Because who wants to get halfway through a level grind, unexpectedly make some kind of critical mistake in a random battle, and just end up often losing possibly hours of progress. I mean, I'm a bit obsessive compulsive in that way in almost all games when I save, for just that reason.
All right, you guys have kind of sold me on this game a little bit, even though I don't
you
like
need
that
to
I
give
can't.
It a shot.
I think I will. I have a lot of NBA 2K to play, but you know, I don't. After that, that can get tiring after a while, and there's no other big like RPG game coming out that I'm gonna like until GTA. And I do. I've read some reviews on Dishonored, and now listening to you guys talk about it, I think I will give it a shot sooner or later. But the big game that's coming out here, I think, what, this Tuesday, October 30th, 31st maybe? Assassin's Creed 3. I've played a few of the prior Assassin's Creed, and I know you guys are going to talk about this. I don't want to get this Assassin's Creed game because they use that stupid Coming Home song in the commercial, and I hate that song.
Why? Is it because the setting is in America? Is that why they use the song? Or
I don't know why they use the song. It's just such an overplayed song, and I don't even think it's a good song, that it just turns me off from the commercial. I actually like the commercial, like the gameplay and, you know, what it looks like the game is and everything. I like it. It looks like something I want to play, but I just hate that damn commercial. I hate that damn song, I should say.
You know, what I like about the Assassin's Creed games up to this point is, and as I'll get to in a moment, it's also what I positively loathe about them. What makes them the Paranormal Activity series for me of video games is the fact that by now we all have pretty much as detailed a blueprint as we could get as to what to expect from each game. Each time, the same things are enjoyable, and for me anyway, the same things are absolutely infuriating. This one intrigues me because, for now the third time in the series, we're experiencing a whole new period of history. We're being taken outside of Ezio's journeys that started in the Italian Renaissance, outside of the initial trials and tribulations of Altair in the first game, and now we're on to the American Revolution. And this one is built on Ubisoft's, built from the ground up pretty much for this game, their Anvil Next engine, which really has me intrigued to see how it tweaks both the gameplay and the graphics. But here's the thing. I like what I'm seeing from the gameplay because it looks like everything that there has been up to this point to love about Assassin's Creed. The stealth elements, the free running, the combat options, the ways to kill as you see fit or as comfortable. It's the continuing weaving of Desmond Miles' modern-day saga of the struggle between Abstergo Industries and the Assassins, with some more hopefully brilliant historical fiction that I expect will be really engaging. I expect that it's going to be visually mesmerizing. Unfortunately, here's what I've also come to expect. A bad, bad ending. I have not found very many endings in this series to be even remotely satisfying, and I have caught hell for saying that from other gamers. The first Assassin's Creed ending, and I'm going to say this trying to spoil as little as possible, was not bad per se, although I felt that adding the mystical and supernatural element quite the way it was at the end felt tacked on and a little bit too abrupt. But it was still perfectly serviceable, even despite having what was ultimately a pretty disappointing boss fight, which is something else you come to expect from these games, unfortunately. I hate the ending of the second game like I hate the endings of few games that I have ever, ever played. Because it is wholly, criminally inappropriate to try to tack on a major plot development over the ending credits. It's rare that it can be done well. I know at this point with gaming, we're taught to pretty much expect that there's going to be some kind of coda tacked on after the developers and everybody have thanked their families for their patience and hope that we buy the next game. And we've seen all the copyright warnings and everything. But it's one thing to do what Batman Arkham City did, where you have Harley Quinn, spoiler alert here, singing her creepy little rendition of Hush, Little Baby, if you beat Game Plus. That's one thing. This, Sam, or correct me if I'm wrong, because it's been a while since I played Assassin's Creed 2, you get a whole couple of minutes into the credits, and you get just a voiceover, not even a cutscene or anything, played off to the side of the credits, a voiceover detailing yep. the big crucial plot point of the game. That's unforgivable after that many hours of gameplay to just tack that on at the very end like that. It's lazy. It's nothing but lazy writing and lazy story development. Now, three tied everything up pretty... Or, I'm sorry, three. My apologies. Assassin's Creed Brotherhood.
Revelations.
Brotherhood actually ended things pretty well with the cliffhanger where it did. That was a good endpoint for that game. That was well done. It was far better, far more effective than the way they ended either of the first two games. The Revelations ending, and I'm talking about the very ending, not the way it ended the section with Ezio, was horrible. Once more, just abrupt, and I was left with just a feeling of, that's it. You're really that confident that I'm going to go out after what was a pretty underwhelming set of gameplay, and then I'm just automatically going to go buy Assassin's Creed 3? You're going to end it that way? Just with that much unanswered? With that much much uncertain? No, screw you. And it's why I've actually been on the fence up until recently about whether I was even going to play this game. Is because you get tired of getting through so many hours of satisfying, visually stunning gameplay that has actually grown deeper and deeper with each installment of the series. And then you get to such a... It's what I like to call a first-person shooter bad ending. Because I played so many first-person shooters to where they focus so much on multiplayer that they end up really shirking the actual story of the single-player campaign. And it's aggravating for people like me who don't get online and play multiplayer much to feel that part of the game was shortchanged. And that's what it feels like Assassin's Creed has been doing for several games now, with only the brief interruption of, ironically, the game that introduces and most emphasizes the damn multiplayer mechanic. So, I don't know. I'm not completely sold on this one, but again, like with the Paranormal Activity series, I'm so entrenched in it at this point that I know I'm eventually going to end up playing it. It's not a buy-the-day-it-comes-out title for me. It's one where I'm probably at this point... I'm just going to wait until there's a price drop or a good Amazon special on it.
Sticking with the ending here, because we're strictly focusing on that aspect, I'll say, and it is the most negative aspect of the game, I think, by far. I think the second ending, the ending for the second game, anytime you have the protagonist literally say, "What the fuck?" you know an ending is bad. That's exactly what Desmond says. Spoiler alert, but... You know, the game ends with Desmond saying, "What the fuck?" And
yeah,
and to me, it's like, just because you have him say that doesn't make the ending any less "what the fuck" worthy. You know what I mean? Like, just because he's echoing the gamer's sentiments doesn't change the fact that the ending is bad. It's like, essentially, they were like, "Well, our ending is abrupt. It's not. It leaves a lot to be desired. It answers very little questions or very few questions, and we know that. So what the fuck?" And that was kind of what it was. And to me, I think the best ending was for the worst game, which was the first. That's not to say that the first game was bad, but gameplay-wise and the mechanics and everything, it wasn't what the others ended up becoming. But to be fair, though,
they were still kind of feeling things out with the first
game. Yeah, absolutely. And yeah. I think that's one of the things the series did really well, is that from the first to the second game, gameplay-wise, they took everything that was – or almost everything that was bad with the first game – and totally improved on it. There was a much longer main story, a much, much longer main story that doesn't just end after a few hours of playing, a lot of side quests, further emphasis on stealth. Let's just say in the first game, you could literally dive into any battle against any number of soldiers. You just counter a bit and start going through these combo killings where you just mash X or whatever it is on the Xbox, and you end up killing like how many guards in a row. And the worst part I thought about the first game is that one of your key assassination targets, again, spoiler alert, the last one, right before, again, spoiler guys, right before Richard the Lionheart shows up, this was, the entire game was leading up to killing him. And you end up killing him. How? Is it by being a stealthy assassin? No, by diving right into battle with God knows how many soldiers, and essentially you reach him and kill him, like Braveheart style or whatever. And that makes zero sense. It's a game about stealth. It's promoted to be about stealth. That's the thing. It's not like my own interpretation of the game or anything. But they've improved upon that. They've improved upon that a lot in the second game. In fact, I'd say the improvement made from the first towards the second game was as drastic as I've seen in any game I've ever played. The second Assassin's Creed game remains one of my favorite games of all time. It's just that the ending sucked. And let's face it, I think one problem with Assassin's Creed, I'll be the guy to say it, all the stuff with Desmond, which is really integral to the story, sucks. There, I said it. He's uninteresting. He's lame. It feels forced. It feels like they're just looking for a way to connect the stories. And you know what? They don't need to. I think Assassin's Creed would work just as well if the three titles were unrelated. Like, you know, okay, it's a battle between Assassins and Templars throughout history, but we don't have to drag it to the modern days. It's fine to have one battle take place in the Holy Land, in Jerusalem and Damascus, and I don't remember where, you know, other cities in the first game, Acre and whatnot. The second game takes place in Italy. You know, it's the subsequent games, they're still in Italy until this last one in Constantinople. And it's totally fine if that were the case. I don't understand why they felt the need to, you know, link it to, you know, this whole Abstergo Assassins thing. I think, let's face it, I'm pretty sure every single gamer or most gamers who played Assassin's Creed, whenever they reached a part with Desmond, they were like, I can't wait for this to end so I can go back to being this badass assassin who kills people.
Oh, yeah.
As opposed to this dude who's sitting in the Animus. Even if it does connect. And let's face it, it did very little connecting, because so far we understand nothing about this story.
Well, and to give an example to the contrary, anybody who's about my age, which is a few months shy of 30, probably a few years younger too, or even any of you youngins who just happened to have maybe picked it up on an emulator, consider Eternal Darkness Sanity's Requiem. It takes all of these stories that take place across centuries united along a common thread, but it ties it to the modern day section of the game in a way where there are some definite stakes, to where there's some engagement between all the sections that makes everything important, that leaves no wasted motion. In this case, Desmond feels like nothing but a framing device. And as you pointed out, a pretty damn uninteresting framing device. You could really restructure this story so that it's just the story of centuries of assassins pursuing the pieces of Eden across centuries. And there are certainly ways that you could do this without Desmond and without the modern-day assassins and without Abstergo Industries and without the Animus at all. It's actually not a bad concept, or I should say it wouldn't be bad, if only Desmond had been made more engaging and if only you had been given really something interesting, something intriguing to do with him. But as it stands, Samur, you pretty much nailed it. He feels entirely pointless. He feels like just a section of marking time that you're forced to go through to get to the next section of actual enjoyment. And Ubisoft is such a competent developer that it just makes me want to go, guys, you know better. You really should know better. The other thing that's going to make this interesting, though, is the fact that, number one, since this has been in development, I should say, funny thing about the development of this, Red Dead Redemption actually came out midway through this game's development. That's how long this has been in the cooker.
And you mean so Assassin's Creed 3?
Yeah. Let me double check which source I'm going with here. According to an interview with Assassin's Creed 3 developers with computerandvideogames.com April of this year. Yeah. And so the Assassin's Creed 3 developers were actually surprised to see Red Dead Redemption come out with the hunting mechanic and that aspect of the gameplay. So at the same time that they were working on for their game. And so that actually ultimately ended up impacting how Ubisoft developed their own hunting mechanic. So that's an interesting little bit of trivia right there. But also, this is going to have some extra features for the Wii U version of the game that's going to be coming out, including weapon changing on the go, permanently visible map on the Wii U game, on the Wii U gamepad, over 12 multiplayer modes. So they're really going out of their way to try to make that port unique, which is great because this seems like a title wherein there should be infinite potential for an engaging motion gaming experience. So this could be one that could really make the Wii U, I think, worth buying. And one of those rare times when Nintendo actually, for a change, gets a real blockbuster third-person title.
They'll screw it up.
You know, it wouldn't surprise me. It really wouldn't surprise me, because that's been one of the downfalls of Nintendo ever since the Wii, is the lack of good third-person development. And the fact that none of the third-person ports over to the Wii have measured up to, I shouldn't say none, that's maybe a bit too broad, but most of the third-person ports over to that system haven't really measured up to what's come out on PC or the PlayStation 3 or the Xbox 360. I'm pretty sure anybody who's played Madden or one of the WWE games would probably attest to that.
Yeah, it's why I had to give away my Wii. It just didn't have any games that I cared about. I can only play Super Mario games for so long.
Well, right, exactly. And that's somebody the other day on Twitter, shortly before I kind of abdicated my personal account, tweeted me an article celebrating how Nintendo had broadened itself so much and broadened the gaming audience. And in the process, had really vaulted its sales and its place in the market to a different plateau that Microsoft and Sony have yet to reach. And I disagree with it. They didn't necessarily broaden it. They just found a niche market that the other two consoles couldn't capitalize on. And that's because the novelty of the motion gaming, it really engages the casual gamers. I like to say that each of the big three consoles has got its select niche. The Xbox 360 is the real choice of the people who like to game a lot online, and especially who love great first-person shooters, because that's where Microsoft has sunk a lot of their development, is into Xbox Live and digital content delivery, and it's the choice of pro online gamers, the ones who don't game on PC anyway. Sony, their bread and butter is original exclusive franchises. Things like Uncharted. Things, franchises like
MLB The Show.
Yeah, MLB The Show. You know, gaming experiences that you're only going to get on the PS3 and absolutely no place else. Nintendo, on the other hand, well, yeah, touche, guys. You really carved out that casual player marketplace. You brought in the non-gamers to the fold, and you found an untapped wellspring of revenue. Kudos. Good for you. Unfortunately, that also makes the GameCube the last Nintendo console I'm ever gonna own, because it was the last one that had really great third-party games. It was the last one that had a really great variety of games. I mean, it's pretty sad when Batman Arkham City is going to be a Wii U launch title, when everybody else on the other platforms has been playing it for almost a full year now. Has been playing and enjoying the fuck out of it for a full year now. So it's kind of like point and laugh in a sad way at Nintendo for the fact, aw, you're just now getting our great Batman game. It's cute how excited you are. But this is the opportunity to really break that. This is the opportunity to take a third-party game, do something distinctive with it, and really make it something special. And I really hope that Ubisoft capitalizes on it. And I hope it's that great on all the platforms. Because really, this is a chance to reinvent it. And this is a chance to finally get some of those things right that have been wrong throughout the entire series. But I'm so afraid at this point that they're just going to keep going with the bad cliffhangers. And then I'm just going to end up disappointed again, just the same way I walked out of Paranormal Activity 4 the other night and actually exclaimed out loud to one of the ushers, well, that was a piece of shit. Because, you know, I tried to give them the benefit of a doubt, and once more, just repeating the mistakes. Just the same mistakes from the third movie, repeated in the fourth movie.
I think their mistake was making three more movies.
Yeah, for real.
Well, that's a conversation for off the air, because I have my definite opinions about it. Or maybe it's just a conversation for a future series of Long Road to Ruin. So
every, I don't know which days you guys record, but with Mark Radulich on 411mania.com.
Yep. But I don't know, Samber, do you think we really missed anything talking about this game? I mean,
no, yeah. I'll say this though. I'm still excited as hell for the third one. I'm a sucker for this series. I think one thing, I don't know if they kind of deliberately hope to achieve or it just happens. I think that because the gameplay is so enjoyable, because all games are visually just absolutely gorgeous, because the setting is so unique and fantastic, that even with the absolutely atrocious ending, you can't really feel, as you just said, well, that was a piece of shit. Maybe you'd go, well, that was a piece of shit ending, but I never walked away feeling, oh man, I wish I hadn't, you know, wasted time on this game. Because to me, maybe this was my own way of being in denial and to try to actually enjoy the game. I try to eliminate anything Desmond related. Honestly, that's how I did. Like, to me, Assassin's Creed is Altair killing bitches and Ezio killing bitches. That's Assassin's Creed to me. The story there with Altair and Ezio is always, it's not really, I wouldn't call it fantastic or anything, but it's a straight to the point story that keeps you pretty much interested throughout the course of its duration. So what I do, honestly, I try to zone everything Desmond related out of. I try to act like this is not part of the game. This is my own Assassin's Creed world that I live in, Desmond does not exist. Desmond is the equivalent of the commercials between various Assassin's Creed stages or wherever you want to call it. That's how I enjoy the game. At least that's how I try to. So I'm still excited for the third one because, as I said, like, the hunt and mechanics are great. At least they look great. The setting is vastly different from the first two games, even though the first two games took place in two different historical eras. There was still a similar feel, I think. This one feels different. which is really, really good. And I mean that in the best way possible. I'm so very excited for it. That's all I'm going to say. So, yeah, I'll definitely be buying it on the first day. I'll pull a Jeremy Lambert and ask my mom to buy it for me.
Well, let's...
Jeremy didn't seem to appreciate my joke. Wait, or he's just not listening.
No, I was listening. I was trying to think, like, what are you talking about? Oh, because of the Taylor Swift CD?
Yeah, I thought that was very obvious.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I bought it. I paid for it. But she just was going out, and I told her to pick it up for me.
Oh, all right. No, that's fine. That's fine.
Well, you know, and really through the rest of October, there are some other great games coming out. We've got Skylanders Giants coming out. The newest Medal of Honor game, Warfighter, if playing yet another Medal of Honor game is actually still appealing to you, which to me is
not. If playing another Warfighter is still appealing to you, because even though they're all enjoyable, like, again, I've never played Battlefield or a Call of Duty game and felt, well, that was a waste of time, but they're all pretty similar still, I feel. Like,
yeah.
I'm a sucker. I'll say this. I'll still buy them all and play them, but never with any measure of excitement. I think I buy Call of Duty at this point just because it's Call of Duty. And to their credit, they do it really well. Even Medal of Honor does it well. But at this point, I try to look at them as sports games. You know what I mean? Like, you'll buy Madden every year. Maybe not you, but most people will buy Madden every single year, or NBA every single year, or me, you know, FIFA. All right, well, but most people will, you know, for better or worse. So to me, I look at these, you know, war first-person shooters as, you know, it's a yearly thing. You'll just buy it, play it, and move on. That's what I do.
Let me touch on the big two first-person shooters that are coming out soon, because I feel like I need to address something to the fans of these. Huh. Another Call of Duty game is coming out soon.
You know this what? One taking place in Iraq?
This one is Call of Duty. Still getting... this one is Call of Duty Black Ops 2. This is a futuristic game about trying to get back stolen weaponry. Let me make this clear. The Call of Duty games, I give them some credit for at least trying with a story. However, by this point, and this is where it has a lot in common with the next game I'm going to get to, nobody, and I do mean nobody, is allowed to buy a Call of Duty game and bitch, hey, this is just like the last game. What the fuck? No. Because when it comes to the Call of Duty series, you should know better by now. The expectations should be firmly in place and the bar set appropriately low for originality. It's not that they're bad games. They're very good games, in fact. It's just that it's the same game again and again and again and again. That brings me to Halo 4.
I hate Halo, by the way. Just felt the need to throw that out. But go ahead.
So do now. I.
Been remotely interested in that series. Tried Halo 3 once, which was really hyped up, and hated it with a passion.
Let me appease the fans here for a second. Halo deserves its place in video game history. It has
being
earned
shit.
It has earned it. No.
There you go. My partner is always.
I'm getting that. There's a but there. The fact is, it revolutionized first-person shooters on the console. It became the reason. It became the flagship of the Xbox brand. It really brought along multiplayer first-person shooters, especially online on the console. For that, it deserves its praise. It also has done a good job of developing a story across all the games. In fact, I dare say it's got perhaps the best actual storyline campaign of any first-person shooter franchise that has been released to date, giving its due. It's also got one of the most stirring, recognizable, thoroughly enjoyable scores of any game. All of that being said, what in every blue flavor of Smurf fuck is wrong with you, fanboys? You have now bought the same game, by my count, 5 times. Halos 1 through 3, OS, it's called, not OST, I'm blanking on the name. I'll name it Halo
OS. Who cares? It's not important.
ODST, yeah. Halo ODST and Halo Reach. And now I just know you're all going to be waiting at the store for Halo 4. Same game. I know Bungie is not involved with this one. I get that. But the fact is, the only thing that sends a message to developers that they're resting on their laurels is when you stop falling for it. Is when it comes out and the word gets out that, my God, same game as last time. You've basically just bought duplicate. I've just bought duplicate copies.
Yeah, well, that's never going to change. Let's be real.
No, well, I don't know. There have been occasional moments when it has, when sales have really tanked hard enough and sometimes for long enough, as was the case with the Resident Evil franchise, to where they actually go back and look at it and say, okay, starting from scratch.
Yeah, that worked out really well.
Yeah, I was about
well
to say,
the
I heard the
game.
New Resident Evil game sucked, so.
Well, no, Sam, remember what we talked about a couple of weeks ago between you and I? Resident Evil 4 was an outstanding...
No, that was a good game. That was a very good game.
The problem was they took the bounce that the franchise got off of that and how celebrated it was for reinventing the Resident Evil legacy, and they proceeded to do next to nothing with it. They released 5, which was regarded as underwhelming because it was both inferior in places and in other places too much like Resident Evil 4, and then came the unmitigated debacle that has been Resident Evil 6, which has been another classic example of how in the world did you screw this up? So, fans, I'm begging you, please, just these are franchises that just, they need to die. They need to go the way of Guitar Hero. Because otherwise, they're just going to keep cranking the shit out. It's going to keep being just a cookie cutter, same thing every single year. And it's going to stifle originality. This is not the same thing as what Rockstar does. No. No. This is tweaking precious little about each game and then just giving it a glossy new marketing campaign. And it's not doing gaming any favors in general. I mean, it's like we talked about a second ago with Assassin's Creed. The series became great when they made a quantum leap between Assassin's Creed and Assassin's Creed 2. And they've continued to improve every game since then. With these two franchises, I don't know. I just can't really say anything great and really revolutionary about Halo since I would say Halo 3. I really can't. Because that was really probably where the series should have just died. So, anyway, moving on from that.
Let's talk about a Rockstar game that's coming out. Grand Theft Auto.
Are there any details on the release date?
The release date that's being kicked around is, I believe I'm hearing March 2013 at the latest.
Oh, that's lame.
Yeah, at first, because I'm guilty of misinforming Jeremy, though, because I read on GameSpot that it would be released. That was like when you type Grand Theft Auto 5. The release date that they're showing was 31st of December. Now, admittedly, I thought that was an odd release date, but whatever. Maybe people would like to spend their New Year's playing. I'm sure a lot of people would have done that. But and it is tempting, I have to admit. But yeah, so that was my fault for misinforming you. But yeah, as Sean said, apparently it's March of 2013. So I'm kind of pissed off about that because
yeah,
Yeah, we're talking about series that have run their courses. I don't care. GTA can still make 5 more games, and I'll happily buy them. And this one, let's face it, they really screw things up. So this one, it looks amazing by what little I've seen.
It really does. And Jeremy, I hate to burst your bubble on that, but yeah, if it were coming out in December, there would have been trailers. There would have been
gameplay footage
by now.
Yeah, that was so weird to me is I thought – I mean, I don't actually blame you for this, Sam. I thought I read somewhere that it was December as well. But
yeah.
I know we're almost into November now, and there's really been no news on it. That's why I was like, damn, it's supposed to be coming out, and there's nothing out there. So hearing that it's March disappoints me. But at the same time, I guess now that my expectations are now reasonable, I'm not going to get to December and be like, where the fuck is my Grand Theft Auto?
Well, and still, March is still close enough, so at least I try to find consolation in that fact.
Well, silver lining, though, November does have some games that are coming out with perfect timing for the holiday season, as is typically the case. That's when a lot of big releases hit shelves, and that really kicks off pretty early in the month. Well, actually, the first game of that month that I'm really looking forward to is, Metal Gear Solid Rising hits on November 2nd. That should be an appropriately solid prequel of the series. Halo 4 hits on November 6th.
No one cares.
Indeed.
Yeah, guys, I'm sorry. I checked the back and there are no fucks left to give. The one that I'm excited about actually is a pretty unheralded title called History Legends of War Patton, which is...
Can I be Adolf Hitler?
Actually, yes, you can play as the Germans.
Are you kidding me? This sounds like the best game ever now.
Yeah, it's...
Hold on. More details, please.
Yeah, no problem. More details. What it is it's a game wherein it's a real-time strategy World War II game wherein General... George S. Patton is indeed the one who guides it. And hang on, I'm actually looking up an update on it right now because I was looking at it earlier.
While you do that, Sean, when you said, yeah, no problem, more details, it just made me think of when you go to iTunes and you click, like, more details for an app or whatever. I want it now to say after I click that, I want a pop-up to come up that says, yeah, no problem, more details, here you go.
By the way, Jeremy, why were you so excited that you can play as Adolf Hitler? Is there something you want to tell? I've never seen anybody get that excited over the mention of Hitler since pretty much 1943 or something.
Well, Sammer, Sean said...
Sammer, don't encourage him, though. Not that long ago, I never expected I'd see somebody so indignant about somebody not getting raped.
Well, Sean said, you know, it's like Legends of War. And, you know, you think of a Legend of War, you think of Adolf Hitler. So... I was like, can I actually be in a game where I can play as Hitler? And so it was intriguing to me.
Well, yeah. And actually, the idea being is you have two main game modes. You have Patton's campaign, in which you do control Patton's Third Army, starting from the French beaches of the D-Day invasion and fighting your way to Germany, to the German capital. With the idea being is that you kind of want to rewrite history and try to arrive at the capital before the Russians do. And
yeah, I definitely want to kill some Russians, by the way.
Right. And you just cut a swath through the Western European theater. However, in the multiplayer mode, I stand corrected. I'm sorry. I quoted the genre wrong the first time. It is a turn-based strategy game. So you're going to be playing what, for lack of perhaps a more apt description, is a big game of Risk with one player controlling Patton's Third Army and another player controlling the German forces. So yes, you can actually play as the Nazis and try to beat back the Allies.
Risk was my favorite board game growing up.
Well, then this may be a good one for you.
Nice. It's an awesome game, by the way. I wish there was a way to play online Risk. I'm sure there is, but yeah.
Right. Well, but also, Patton's characteristics as a general will also impact his troop performance. So that's where the strategy aspect comes in. And you have to advance his characteristics in terms of prestige, offensive capabilities, defensive capabilities, tactics, logistics, charisma, and experience.
That sounds way too complicated for Jeremy. I'm sorry.
I played Pokemon.
That's a good game. That is a good game.
It, you know what? It has been Nintendo's best-selling franchise for a reason.
I actually like that.
Yeah. But you have 7 operations, 35 missions, 22 locations, 3 different environments. So it really sounds like pretty deep gameplay. I'm legitimately very excited and very curious about this.
All right, you've sold me on this game. What else we got?
Okay. So now you're buying Dishonored, The Legends of War, and are you going to buy Assassin's Creed 3, Jeremy?
No, not right away. And Dishonored
might
have to wait.
We should get royalties. We should get royalties off of this podcast. Why? Dishonored. Are you a little short? Why? Are you a little short on money after Taylor Swift CD? Which you illegally downloaded anyway?
Yeah, but then I bought it to support the artist.
Well, Jeremy, one thing you might want to do is you might want to consider picking up a new Wii or perhaps a Nintendo DS.
No, I'm not doing that.
No, you shouldn't.
Even despite the fact that there's a Victorious game coming in November?
Yeah, all those games suck, though. I've played, like, the iCarly games and the Hannah Montana games. They're fun for, like, my little sister will buy them, and I'll play them for, like, 5 hours and then get bored with it.
Wait, I keep forgetting every time. Do you actually have a little sister?
No.
Why do you keep referring to her, though?
Because I've known her whole life. So she's like my little sister.
How old is she?
9.
How do you know her?
My mom's friend, not my mom's friend, my mom's coworker, who is my friend. He's the person who comes over to watch the UFC pay-per-views with me.
Right, John.
Yeah, it's his daughter.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
Yeah, man, she has a DS and she has a Wii and, you know, she's that age where she likes all that stuff. I would say crap, but I mean, I watch it, so...
I was so hedging my bets that this story would at one point involve the phrase, "Well, I used to own this van."
Wow. You went there.
Calm down, Miguel Torres. Let's not do this.
That's all cool.
Yeah.
He just referred to her as his little sister.
Oh, what? I always have to be the level-headed one? Jeremy can make rapey jokes?
No, but don't make any pedophilia innuendos. What is wrong with you?
My apologies. I was watching a lot of Law & Order SVU before we started the podcast.
All right, continue on. Victorious game, I'll play. Let's get off this subject. Victorious game, I'll play off my little sister's DS, but go on.
I wanted to ask Sean one thing, though, about The Last of Us. When is that getting released? Because I am stoked.
The Last of Us. That is a good question. I have so much to keep track of.
Jeremy, do you like the Uncharted games? You told me you liked them, right?
Yeah, you're supposed to send me the third one.
Oh, fuck. Wow. How on earth do you remember that? That was ages ago. I said I'd send it after I finish it, and that game got released like almost a year ago, and I finished it in like a week.
It took you a week?
Maybe tops. I've played it a lot. Why, is that too long or too little?
I rented it, and I think I had it done in about... I think that was about a 2 or 3 day playthrough.
Well, you guys don't have a life.
No. Hold on. A week means if you play it like on average, like what, 3 hours every 2 days, you can finish the game in a week. So that when you think about it, it's
okay, okay. Yeah, I would give you that one. You were asking about The Last of Us.
No. Let's get back to Sammer needing to send me this game so I can play it. I remember everything.
Yeah, except reminding me that you were coming to Montreal next month.
No, I remembered. You were the one who forgot.
Yeah, okay, but you neglected to remind me.
I neglected to realize that your memory is not as good as mine.
Okay, here's a thought. Jeremy, have you played the first 2 Uncharted games?
I played the first.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
you should play the second one though first, because the second is amazing. It arguably is the best of the series. By the way,
I agree. Well, I would say
toss.
No, I played the first 2.
Oh, you played the second one.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, sorry. Then
I think it's a toss-up between 2 and 3 as to which one is better.
I think the story for 3 is absolutely ridiculous. It's amazing. It's probably one of the best cinematic experiences I've seen. Yeah. But the second game also had this – we've talked about it for Assassin's Creed. I think the real leap in improvement between the first and the second game. So that also played a factor. When you play it, you're like, wow. I mean, the first game was already good, but like they've improved it a lot. So that I think by the time the third one was released, we expected something absolutely amazing. So that's the difference for me. But Jeremy, if I still had that game, I would have sent it to you. You should have reminded me that less than a year ago. What is wrong with you?
Speaking of Assassin's Creed, or not Assassin's Creed, speaking of Uncharted and Naughty Dog, the wonderful, wonderful people who made Uncharted, this game, which is made by Naughty Dog with their own in-house engine and the Havoc game physics, is set to come out in 2013, and it is I wouldn't call it a survival horror. It's a gunfighting and melee combat game, much like, from the sounds of it, Uncharted.
Yeah, it is awesome. You should watch.
Is that this Last of Us game you were talking about?
Yes. Okay. What you are is you're playing as humans who are fighting off other humans who have been infected by.
Oh, don't say like zombies or some shit. I don't want to play that.
No, they're not zombies.
Okay.
No,
well,
not
from what I've seen.
No, not zombies. But there are humans who have been infected by a fungus and have been made hostile. So, Samer, would you say that's a pretty fair description of it?
Yeah. It's a good You can YouTube it, Jeremy. Actually, they were on GameSpot. They posted like a 20-minute playthrough of the game. Obviously, I've only watched 5 minutes just to formulate an idea, and it looks amazing. You can definitely see some Uncharted in that, like minus the climbing and jumping around and that sort of stuff. But you can definitely see some Uncharted in it. The fighting mechanics are pretty similar. So, and again, I mean, it is the same developer, so it wouldn't come as a surprise. And, I mean, there's no reason why there shouldn't be an Uncharted feel to it. I think it'd be stupid if there wasn't, really.
I'll have to look up that, then.
Elsewhere in November, this is really turning out to be the season of stealth, because we've also got Hitman Absolution, which, after a few fairly disappointing installments in the series, this looks like one where they've really broken out of that rut and really started getting into the kind of kill and stealth customization, the kind of wide open options that we're seeing in Dishonored, in Assassin's Creed, and something that's really going to create a much deeper gameplay experience that, it's my prediction, is going to revolutionize the series the way Metroid Prime revitalized Metroid, the way Resident Evil 4 revitalized Resident Evil. So I have very high hopes for this, and I'm going to be disappointed if it doesn't live up to them. We're finally going to get the battle between Konami and EA on the soccer pitch, because Pro Evolution Soccer 2013 is going to be hitting up.
Talking about sports games. Move on.
Oh, wow. Come on. The moment he mentioned soccer, hold on. The game was released, actually.
Right. But it's coming out on the Wii.
Who gives a fuck about the Wii?
Right. Yeah, that's true. Actually, if I may say very quickly that even though FIFA is still the better series, or at least have become the better series since maybe 2010 or something, this Pro Evolution Soccer game is a vast improvement. That's all I'll say. That's all Jeremy's going to allow me to say anyway.
Right. 5 good seconds of soccer talk. Larry Zonka will get that reference if he listens, which he won't.
Let me guess, Dan Patrick.
Good job, Samer.
That's all your reference.
That's right.
We also have the what looks now very disappointing PlayStation All-Stars Battle Royale, which, come on, it was obvious that it was an effort to compete with Super Smash Brothers, but unfortunately, with the more than a little bit disappointing roster, this is looking more and more like the XFL of the two games, shall we say.
I'm buying that, then.
You like the XFL, Jeremy?
How can you not?
Are you serious?
Instead of a coin toss, they put the ball in the middle of the field. You fight for it. You can put whatever name you want on the back of the jersey. He hate me?
Jeremy, let's not get into that.
You really don't think that whole put the ball in the middle of the field and let them fight for it thing is original, do you?
No, but it was awesome.
Sean is so
I just wanted to briefly, in a roundabout way, ascertain whether or not Jeremy had in fact ever watched rugby.
No, dude, come on.
I've watched some rugby, but I don't know the rules or anything.
He probably joined in midway through the match, so he doesn't actually get to see the initial.
Yeah, that. Fighting. Yeah, I know. I tuned in, and then I was like, "Oh shit, it's rugby!" And then I turned it off.
We've got Far Cry.
Wait, let's go back to this XFL thing. I know it's not. Why? We're not talking about XFL. What's the roster like on this Sony All-Stars thing? Why is it going to be so disappointing, but I'm going to love it?
Well, since you asked, and this maybe won't be quite as disappointing to you as it is to me as a bit of a Sony loyalist, but for starters, two members of your roster are the same character from the same game, just one's good and one versus evil. If you can't guess, or if you haven't already heard, yes, there is good Cole McGrath from Infamous, and there's evil Cole McGrath, which, come on. Basically a palette swap, really. That nothing smacks of laziness quite like that. You've got some characters who it feels like are conspicuously left out in favor of much more minor, I think less enticing choices. Like, I'm personally not really all that jacked up about having Fat Princess in this. But at the same time, we're going to leave out Crash Bandicoot, Spyro the Dragon, Lara Croft, nobody from Final Fantasy.
Wait, they don't have Crash Bandicoot?
No Crash Bandicoot. No.
That sounds stupid.
It's missing, and that was what the Smash Brothers rosters have always nailed, is they hit all the iconic Nintendo faces. It's pretty complete. There are a few complaints one could make about those.
All right, I'll buy this game when it gets to like $15 or something, or I can just get it for free. I'm not paying full price.
I'll send it to you, Jeremy. I'm never getting it, though.
Thank you.
It's one of those that when I play it in five years, then.
Never getting it, so you'll never play it.
It's one of those that when I was actually on Twitter, I started seeing a lot of people complaining about it when it was announced, and I was kind of skeptical at first, wondering, well, how bad could it really be? And then I went and looked. And kudos for nailing stuff like getting Big Daddy from BioShock. You got Kratos, obviously. Good for you. You got Nathan Drake from Uncharted. You got Sly Cooper. You got Heihachi from Tekken. But too many left out.
Wouldn't the Tekken and Mortal Kombat guys just kill everybody?
Well, that's the idea behind these games, though, is you balance out the combat style, so you could have somebody who's maybe, really great with all the superior powers and everything of the Tekken and Mortal Kombat fighters. But on the other hand, you could have somebody else who really proves to be kind of superlative with Cole McGrath's range attack, or what I expect would be probably considerable agility of Sly Cooper. I mean, that's the fun of these games. Is, it's like they've tried to say in MMA for years, styles make fights.
Yeah.
So. John Jones, chill song.
I was about to say that. All right, what else is coming out in November and December?
Well, that's in December. We have the rehashed Tomb Raider, which I'm actually pretty excited about.
I am excited about it as well.
Yeah, I'm intrigued to see what they do with it. Because I think this is now their third attempt to really reboot it and breathe new life into the franchise. And we're going to get our, which means also we're getting our third redesign, Laura Croft.
Hey, that's
No, it's good to see it freshened up a little bit. I'm not sure if this one is once more going to have her bust size reduced, but
I hope not.
She needs longer legs.
Why?
So she can climb around and kick higher and stuff.
I'm sure. Are you a fan of Tomb Raider, Jeremy? It sounds like a game you'd play.
Yeah, I like Tomb Raider.
She's a female protagonist. You seem to like this whenever there's a female protagonist, or, you know, you're all for women empowerment. That's why you're a fan of Taylor Swift.
Because fans of
it. How do you get that? Because I like Tomb Raider and what else? Uncharted, I guess.
No, what Uncharted. Uncharted. The Nathan Drake as a male. In case.
Yeah, I know that. But the other chick, you have the crush on.
Oh,
she's a female.
I still do. Elena Fisher, the love of my life.
So Tomb Raider. That's the only reference you have here.
Taylor Swift. You do seem to like those.
You said
know,
video
whenever...
games though.
No, I'm saying in general. I said you. The whole female empowerment issue appeals to you. That's what I said. I wasn't strictly...
Females have a choice. They can be on the top or the bottom. Yeah. There's
a reason why you fell in love with Jennifer Lawrence in... what's his name? Hunger Games.
That's right.
Yeah, so I'm right in my assessment. I didn't say anything that was inaccurate.
Sure, but
there's
I'm
nothing
never,
wrong with it. I'm just
I'm never playing saying. A WNBA game, though. That's stupid.
That's not female empowerment. That's female embarrassment. There's a difference.
that's a good point. All right, what else is coming out besides this?
Nintendo fans, you're getting Kid Icarus Uprising. According to VG releases, the
no
PC
one plays Nintendo. Don't mention those.
That's true.
Yeah, that's a point.
that is a
PC gamers, you get Devil May Cry 5. Y'all have fun with that.
Hey, was World of Warcraft the new one? Was it as good as Build? Speaking of PC game,
I wouldn't know because I am not an MMO guy.
Yeah, neither am I. But I've heard a lot about it.
And listed December 31st. God, I hate you so much, Square Enix. We have. That can't be right. This site's got to be wrong.
What's the damn game?
They have Final Fantasy 13 listed.
I think it is the de facto date they have whenever they don't know when a game is getting released. It's similar to the GTA thing.
I wasn't sure if I'd missed something. Okay, yeah, I'm looking at the info. I'm kind of on a fuck this site kick now because. This is. What game could they possibly be talking about?
All right. Well, Final Fantasy is not coming out December 31st.
Well,
do you like Final Fantasy? Jordan?
Okay, maybe.
No,
maybe
I played a couple versions. I don't remember which one.
Hey,
quit interrupting me! Shut up.
Well, you shut up! I'm trying to correct myself.
Well, I was talking. Correct yourself after I get done. I've played a couple of versions of the Final Fantasy, and I don't really like it. Go ahead, Sean. See, you couldn't wait for that?
Well, the fact is, Final Fantasy is not an entirely bad series. If it's something you can...
Wait, where's the correction here?
Well, okay, yeah, I'll get to that correction. I'll get to my correction first, and I'll correct you. I think what they mean
How
is the fact
that... How can you correct
that...
me on a game that I don't like?
Guys.
We have Lightning Returns Final Fantasy 13 was in production and to be released in 2013. So maybe that's what they mean. Because for Christ's sake, that's exactly what we need. We haven't gone far long enough without a new Final Fantasy stack of shit to play through. Despite the fact that none of the games have been even remotely playable since 10, and 10 is stretching it.
No, we're supposed to preview the good games here. What is going on?
I don't know. Sean has dragged us down.
I'm sorry. I have blanket hatred for very few developers, but I have learned a deep-seated resentment of Square Enix.
Sean is over here crucifying Final Fantasy. Well, we all hated Halo, but whatever other game that you were ranting about earlier.
Oh no! I'm forgiving of Halo. My problem with Final Fantasy series has not been its great self since Final Fantasy VII, and yet this is what they keep cranking out, despite the fact that when Kingdom Hearts 2 came out, I was still in college.
Well, and whenever you get to like the 13th title of a game, it's time to hang it up, really. Whatever that game might be.
And you know, we're even past the joke of that people made about the Final Destination series, where we're saying, we really have no idea what final means. Please, there needs to be a final fantasy, and just let it fucking die.
Here's how I equate this. Every day could be your final day on Earth. That's why it's a gift. And then they call it the present.
That's you.
Don't you wax you butchered about this until you have played one of the latter Final Fantasy games, boyo.
I wasn't trying to butcher it, Samurai. I was trying to put a spin on it.
A reference. Hold on. The actual quote is today. What is it? No. It's the past is history. Tomorrow's a mystery. And today is a gift. That's why they call it the present. Yeah. Don't you butcher any Jeffrey Harris quotes, Jeremy.
I wasn't trying to butcher it. I was trying to put a spin on it because we were talking about final and, you know, final. Yeah.
Yeah.
Jeffrey Harris quote. That's been said long before.
No, I know. Hey, hold on. Sean.
Sean doesn't understand our inside humor.
No, I know, but I genuinely thought Jeffrey Harris came up with that quote.
Yeah.
That quote first appeared in, I forgot the name of the book, but dude, it appeared in Kung Fu Panda in 2008, so I totally understand that Jeffrey Harris did not come up with that one.
Well, and before that, it appeared in a somewhat truncated sense in the Social Distortion song, so.
Yeah, well.
Yeah.
Taylor Swift needs to use it on her next album.
But she's more creative than that.
Yeah, we're never ever getting back together. Very creative. Don't you dare sing that song. Shut up. Sean, continue.
I was going to say, for Christ's sake.
You called me up.
Go ahead, John. Fuck you
and your unborn great-grandchildren.
I actually concur with that.
Oh, I can't stand Taylor Swift. Oh, dude.
What are you doing here? Don't start.
Podcast over, everybody.
No, Final Fantasy, just, I don't care if ending this series does end with the ritual, I have nothing left to live for suicide, of a million dippy cosplayers in their life-size Moogle suits. This series needs to go bye-bye. It has not been worth its salt in years, and it's very clearly never going to be ever again. Just go away and finally give us our long-awaited Kingdom Hearts sequel before this goes the way
of
Shenmue 3. Yeah, exactly. This is the new Shenmue 3. I can hope for it all I want to, because there's a saying about hoping in one hand and shitting in the other one. You know which one's going to fill up first.
Personally, I can't wait till 2013 just so that I can play GTA 5 and Injustice. That's all I care about right now, honestly. Jeremy, you should buy Injustice. Do you like superheroes?
Oh, yes, definitely Injustice.
Lambert.
What is it about? Superheroes?
It's a fighting game between superheroes. It's a DC comic fighting game. It's pretty sweet. It's not a Marvel, but it's DC comics.
Is it like a fighting game, one-on-one fighter, Mortal Kombat?
It's the developer of Mortal Kombat. So it's like Mortal Kombat. Essentially, it's not strictly, you know, Mortal Kombat, because there's no blood. They don't do fatalities or anything because, well, it's Batman and Superman and they don't kill people. But so far, like, the names announced, Joker, Batman, Superman, Harley Quinn, Nightwing, Green Arrow. It's pretty sweet. Wonder Woman, since you like the whole female empowerment thing. And on top of that, there's a story. There's a main story to be played. So it's not, you know, strictly just mindless fighting. And you should look it up on YouTube. It looks amazing.
All right.
This is a concept where when you look at all the parts going into it, the Mortal Kombat team that's making this would have to almost be trying to tank this in order to fuck this up.
I mean, they've done horrible games in the past. I'll say this. These 3D Mortal Kombat games, for the most, some of them, it was hit and miss, but the bad ones were really bad. They've went back to their roots with 2D for this past game, which was absolutely great to me. There are, like, honestly, the only way this past game where you wouldn't enjoy Mortal Kombat 9 was if you're a pro fighting game expert and you memorize the frame data and all that stuff, and really the smallest glitch hinders your enjoyment of the game. And I understand that. But for if you're a casual gamer, it was an amazing game. And they're taking a similar engine for this one. So they'd have to royally, deliberately screw it up in order for it not to be at least very enjoyable.
Yeah, I heard a couple of complaints about Mortal Kombat, but I think the gist of them were from a certain permanently butthurt twat waffle ex that guy with the glasses reviewer. So I have to take that with a grain of salt because the poor stupid son of a bitch hates everything. So that he wouldn't like a virtually perfect fighting game doesn't surprise me in the least.
I didn't know Robert Winfrey wrote for that website.
Wow. Why are you burying Robert Winfrey?
What's the deal? I don't know. He hates everything.
Does he?
You're not
following
him?
Yeah, he does, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, now that you mention it, at least, I mean, I think I'm negative about MMA. He hates everything. Yeah. He never enjoys anything, even the greatest fights. Like, yeah, it is.
The greatest fights are sloppy.
That's true. I don't know. What is that reference, though? What fight did he call sloppy?
Oh, I don't know. He just thinks every fight's sloppy, even if it's, like, entertaining. He can't find entertainment because it's not technical enough.
I don't read. I only see his tweets. I don't read his columns.
Oh, neither do I. But
okay.
Even his tweets.
Well, Anderson Silva looks sloppy in his last 16 fights.
Yeah.
Well, no. If it's too technical, then it's too boring.
Oh, okay. So Anderson Silva can be either sloppy or boring.
Yeah.
All right.
Well,
what do we have to talk about here?
You know,
I think we've pretty much covered everything.
We're not talking MMA.
Yeah, I think we've covered most of what's announced is coming fairly soon, because everything else we're just kind of waiting on word to hear. Oh, probably I would say at E3, I imagine.
Yeah, okay, when is E3, by the way?
E3 is going to be I believe it's either May or June is usually when it is.
Oh, we're doing a podcast before then. We're doing a GTA podcast in March.
Yeah, we're definitely doing a GTA podcast before that, isn't us? Good God, I'm excited.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, by the way, call me cliche, whatever. Call me whatever you want. But does it really get any better than Grand Theft Auto? It's you might enjoy some games more, and I do, but this one is almost, you know, you can't go wrong with it. It's GTA. Pretty much, I think it is the most influential game of the past, say, 2 decades, maybe. Especially on third generation consoles, or even the second one, even on the PS2.
I think that's stretching it, saying it's the most influential. But I also think that
give it a run for its money, though.
Well, that's why I said I think maybe, because I would actually have to sit and kind of give it a little bit of thought. But there is no understating its influence, though. Especially since John Jones loves that. But yeah, it's very true in that just to scratch the surface. I mean, for one thing, without Grand Theft Auto 3, we don't get the signature Rockstar style that's permeated all of their games from Grand Theft Auto up through Bully and the Warriors, right up to Red Dead Redemption, to a somewhat lesser extent, LA Noire.
You mentioned that game one more time, and I'm going to start expressing my love. So if you don't want this podcast to drag for another hour, don't mention Red Dead Redemption again, ever.
Gotcha. Message received. But also, if not for that, I imagine we wouldn't have the kind of mechanic that we had in Batman Arkham City.
I mean, most open-world games, they're really highly influenced by GTA. It set the standard, I think. And quick piece of news, I'm making plans actually to travel to Las Vegas next July to attend Evo. So you guys wish me luck. I know I'm going to get destroyed, but it's about the experience. For those who don't know, these are the world championship for fighting games. So,
nice, yeah.
You can't even win the Canadian world championships.
The Lebanese.
Dude, yeah, the Lebanese.
Dude, first of all, if you watch videos of like MK9 players. Like, you know, Perfect Legend is the guy. Well, that's his. That's not his real name, obviously. He's the guy who won the past two MK tournaments at Evo, and obviously, and I've played, you know, some of the really good players online, and they would destroy me. But again, it's about the experience. Plus, it's Vegas, dude. What are you talking about? I'm just going there to play video games. Plus, Mortal Kombat 9 might not even be at Evo, but Injustice will. So I play either that or the other. But
I'm going to come visit you in July for Vegas.
Dude, if that happens, you have to come.
All right. Well, I'll make sure to mention it, you know,
month by month, and not just
bring it up in June.
Yeah, but actually, this one I can't forget since I'm the one making the plans. But yeah, go ahead.
Maybe we scratch the Jonestown pay-per-view thing, since that's going to suck anyway, and go to Vegas instead.
Oh, I don't know about that. I don't want to wait that long to see you.
My brain has gotten hung up on Jeremy referring to the Canadian World Championships, and now I just want to open a theme park called Canada World.
Why? What's it going to be like? A bunch of trash can talking heads and hockey players? That's stupid.
Did you just take hockey and refer to something as stupid other than the lockout?
Well, yeah, hockey's pissing me off right now because there is a lockout.
Huh.
All right, let's wrap this up.
Jeremy, would you cheer me on during my games if I'm attending?
I would bring a sign.
All right, cool.
Oh, what the hell? You guys are going to be actually not that far from me. You ought to drop by Phoenix for a little bit.
How about you come to Vegas? Well, Phoenix sucks.
Come to Vegas.
Fuck you, buddy.
Hey, fuck you, buddy. I'm not your buddy. Fuck you, pal.
What's up with the accent, though? What is that supposed to impersonate?
It's a South Park reference. At least I think that's what Sean was going for.
Yeah, I was going for a half-assed rendition of a South Park Canadian.
All right.
Sorry, I want to get Family Guy references.
Yeah, because you're lame. All right. Let's wrap this up.
Well, I'm sorry. If I can make non-sequitur cutaway gags work in a podcast, God knows I would.
All right. Let's wrap this up. Sean, appreciate you coming on. Go ahead and plug everything. You're off Twitter. So,
for personal reasons, I want to say, not that anybody who ever listened to this actually did, but do not attempt to follow at 24/7 Sean. I am leaving that open exclusively to communicate with my 411 Mania
brother.
Talk to
me.
Amongst other people, yes. You and Thomas and Zonka and Rodlich and everybody else. But
I feel left out.
So I was about to say, he didn't even mention
and Sammer,
you. Yes,
Jesus
and Sammer, and Sammer, sorry. But after what was kind of an unfortunate mishap on Saturday, I am pretty much abdicating that account. If you tweet me there and you don't get a response, don't take it personally. Just know that you were warned. So in the meantime, I will hopefully next podcast have my new blog and Tumblr account set up so you can go ahead and read my rantings, ramblings, and musings there. But for now, just go read my musical musings every Monday on the 411 Music Top 5 and every Saturday on the 411 Music Zones, Music's 3 R's. So that's
Sean's
all I
got. Sean's going to be back on in November for Bad Movie Review Club. We have Hobo with a Shotgun, which sounds awesome, and I can't wait to watch
it. It does. I'm actually going to listen to that.
Jeremy, let me warn you about something. Actually, not so much a warning, just a piece of very sage-like advice. Enjoy this movie.
Enjoy
every second. Enjoy every minute of it.
I always enjoy these movies that I watch for this
podcast
we have.
You better enjoy this because after the ridiculousness of the rape conversation over nude nuns with big guns, your reckoning is coming. I have something very special. I have the motherfucker H-bomb of all white elephant gifts for you coming in December.
I don't know what any of that just said meant, but that's okay. He still should have raped the daughter first. Sammer.
Dude, what the hell?
Sean will get it. Maybe everyone listening will get it.
Nobody else will get it because nobody listened to your podcast.
That's not very nice.
Naked nuns with whatever guns.
That was actually a well-listened-to podcast.
Well, people like train wrecks.
Exactly.
I should actually start listening to your podcast with Sean about bad movies.
Was the episode that bad? I mean,
no,
it's not about the episode.
I was gonna say I never heard the download numbers for it, but
he never gives them away
because I don't check them honestly.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, Zonka did tell us after the second episode that after something like a week, it had already eclipsed the downloads of our first episode.
Yeah, so. Zonka always tells me the numbers, and I'm just like, thanks, and then I just forget them, but there you go.
Oh, I should pull some strings and find out if my show, whenever, I want to see if I equal ratings on your
podcast. I can tell you what our highest rated one was.
I don't want give me our highest. No, don't actually mention the number. Just tell me for what episode it was. Like, what were we previewing or reviewing?
That's all I was going to do. I'm not mentioning numbers. I think
You're like
was,
the UFC. You don't release pay-per-view buy rates.
That's right. It was the, I don't know if this was the highest. At least in recent, our highest was where we previewed the Strikeforce show that never happened.
What the fuck? No way.
I think we reviewed like UFC on Fuel, like the Stefan Struve fight, and then we previewed.
How on earth was that the most listened to podcast? That doesn't make any sense.
The one before that, the most listened to, was a UFC 149 review. And remember how bad that pay per view was?
Talking about Burrell and Faber.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
Everybody,
so that doesn't make
in...
any sense.
No,
the UFC should maybe look to revise its priorities. They should put more emphasis on Strikeforce and put more Hanan Barao in main events.
Yeah.
But that doesn't make any sense, though. It's completely random, right? Like, there isn't a correlation between what show is it and whether there's actual interest. Because once you said UFC 149, I immediately thought, oh, Chael Sonnen and Anderson Silva 2. But apparently that's not what it was. So that doesn't make any sense.
Well, I think people just want to listen to us rant about shit. You know, UFC 149 sucked. The Strikeforce show, we ranted about how much that sucked. So
I still think it's random. Highly doubt that the reason why it got more clicks was because, oh, well, you know, that sucks. Let's hear what they have to say about it. So
they
just think it's
they
random.
Think we're great when we're burying stuff, which I can't really argue.
That's
with
all
that.
We do. And again, I don't agree with that narrative. I still believe it's random. I just think maybe, you know, it was a down week and people didn't have anything else to do. In other words, our listeners are stupid.
Well, they listen to us, so come on.
Oh, but we love them. That's why we love them.
That's right. All right. Samer, follow him on Twitter, at SamerKatie, drop the MMA.
It's at SamerKatie MMA, by the way. There's no drop. And I don't mean that none of you guys are stupid. It was a joke. I love you all, except a couple of you. You know who you are. But,
Mark Radulich.
No, what? I love him the most. What are you talking
I know,
about?
That's why I said that.
Even though
like
he's killing, he was killing sharks last Sunday. Don't get me started on that. But,
no, we're not going there. All right, and Samer writes half of a column with me because we're lazy.
Oh, shut up. I write 75%. What are you talking about?
Sure. I could say you write 100% and you ghostwrite all my stuff, and I'd give you full credit for that.
I don't want to say that because my sentences are better structured than yours, so I don't want to take credit for shit.
All right, fine. You write 95% of the column for all I care. If people think that, I honestly don't care.
I don't want that credit.
I said 95%. The percentage structure is the 5% that falls on me.
Oh, don't get upset, Jeremy. You know I couldn't do it without you. I literally couldn't do it without you, by the way. The only reason I'm doing it is because, well, you know, you share the load.
All right. Thanks.
That's what she said.
You sound upset.
No, I didn't. Right. I want to thank you both for coming on to talk video games. Again, Sean's going to be on November for Bad Movie Review Club. Samer's going to be on whenever the next MMA event is, which I don't think is still.
Saint-Pierre and Conda, dude.
No.
Can't wait.
No, Franklin and Kung Lee is before that.
Oh, fuck. Well, there goes my bubble.
So that's the next MMA event. This podcast took a very long time. It only lasted an hour and 45 minutes. We've been talking for probably 3 hours. I want to thank you both for actually sticking with this and not killing me.
Thank you for doing this. It was our request, so you deserve the credit, actually. I mean it.
Oh, yeah, man. Yeah, thank you for giving us the floor. Appreciate it.
I know. Well, I really felt bad for how long it took, and I was getting frustrated, and I hate when that happens. But luckily, you guys are understanding, so that's one good thing. So there you go. Thanks for listening. Take care, everybody.
The end.